Welcome to Cross Defense on this Monday, October the 26th, 2015. Rod Zwanitz are your host, welcoming you into this apologetics program where we talk about the intellectual challenges to the Christian faith. You know, sometimes when you think about that, they're not very intellectual, but they are challenging. Some think that they're intellectual. Today's might be in this category of people just like to rationalize what they want to do. And so we are here to help you answer these challenges to the Christian faith, whether they be of intellectual value or not. And we thank our underwriter, Luther Academy, as you heard in the spot before the show began, doing some great things around the world, helping the Church of Jesus Christ conferences and helps for pastors around the globe. Right now, they're in Japan. They've just been in Madagascar, around the globe to do that. Also, Logia, that excellent journal of theology, and their confessional dogmatic series. Check it all out and more at lutheracademy.com. Today's guest is going to help us with a challenge. You be the judge of how intellectual this challenge is, but we hear it quite a bit today, especially from younger people. You know, people are free to do whatever they want to do, they say, as long as it doesn't hurt anybody. To help us answer this is our good friend, contributor to Cross Defense, Pastor Sam Schultheis. He's pastor at Redeemer Lutheran Church, Huntington Beach, California. So if you live in that area, check out a great church, Huntington Beach, California, Redeemer Lutheran Church. He's also a thinking fellow at 1517 Legacy. Welcome back to Cross Defense, Sam.
Thanks, Rod. Good to be back with you today.
Good. Listen, you know, as I prepared for this show and thought about this challenge of where people say that they're free to do whatever they darn well choose to do as long as it doesn't hurt anybody, I thought, wow, you know, it would be tough for me to defend that one unless I wanted to rationalize in my own head and anybody else that would go along with my thinking that I have the right to do this behavior. So let's jump right into this. They're kind of knocking absolute truth, are they not?
Yeah, and I think that's kind of the surface, the surface attack or the maybe the first wave. It's kind of a subtle two-punch, and maybe we can get into why that's the case in a few minutes or so after we, like I said, deal with this kind of this first wave or, you know, maybe the first left hook before the uppercut kind of thing. It seems to be a bit more maybe relativistic or, you know, kind of the popular postmodern, there's no absolute truth kind of statement. Of course, the irony of that is that once you say there's no such thing as absolute truth, you've made a statement of absolute truth. It's just depending on who the person is making it. So it all becomes very subjective. And this is another one of those kinds of subjective arguments against the Christian faith. And so it does, I think you were right, if you get faced with this kind of objection, how do you deal with it? There's probably a lot of different ways you could deal with it and go through it, some of which I've thought of, and I'm sure you have as well, and we can discuss. But it's a little different than going through an objective objection to the Christian faith, something like, I don't think the Gospels were written by, first-hand eyewitness accounts, or I don't think they're very reliable, or something like that. That's another argument against Christianity, another objection, but one that can be done a little bit more objectively. This one at least starts off with kind of in the realm of subjectivity and feelings, and that can always get a little bit thorny to sort out and walk through a bit. So I'm glad we're tackling this today.
I am too, and I think a lot of our listeners out there, Sam, they might be in that position where even some of their loved ones of a younger sort might be kind of bantering this defense about, because as you and I know, as Christian pastors, guilt is a very powerful and strong emotion in all us human beings because we're
certainly
sinners. And so rather than, you know, point the finger at us, as, you know, the law tends to do, We want to point it somewhere else and say, look, I'm making these choices freely, and they're none of your concern. They really don't hurt anybody else except those involved. And I don't know where you'd like to start here, Sam, but you know, in my preparing for this, it sure seems like that our culture today wants to use this primarily in sexual preferences. You know, that we'll do what we want to do. If two people love themselves so much, how could it ever be wrong? Because they're not hurting anybody else, right?
It's just kind of two people. The old adage of, it's my body, my life. Yeah, who are you to tell me what to do? That kind of thing. I often wonder if people that have this philosophy about whether it's things of more sexual intimacy character or whether it's anything else have, you know, bothered to teach their children that and see if that rule follows sort of, you know, on the playground kind of thing. Like, well, I was just doing such and this because it made me feel good, and, you know, kind of essentially who cares if it hurts anybody else. But most of the time we tend to not teach our children those kinds of things because we know that it's going to lead to some rather bad consequences, whether it's the playground or home or as they get older in life too. We tend to want them to instill them with a sense of right and wrong because we know that those things are going to, you know, help steer them correctly or at least give them a good foundation to make, you know, wise choices later on, even if they don't make all of them. So it's sort of a bit of a libertine attitude. And, you know, it also is ironic, too, though, because I'm free to do whatever I want, but, you know, it's not really free, is it? It's really more of a slavery kind of thing, really more of a binding sort of thing, which is, of course, what sin does. We just read the gospel reading for Reformation Sunday yesterday from John chapter 8, and Jesus talks about anyone who sins is a slave to sin. And we often get trapped in our own way of thinking that we know what is right and best for ourselves, and, you know, my way or the highway kind of thing. It always boils down to, you know, the old sinful nature doing what it likes to do best, which is trying to take over and be God. And though we think that doing these things or behaving these ways or acting in the way that we think is right often, as the Proverbs say, lead unto death and are not freeing at all. They're actually binding and lead us deeper into the clutches and captivity of sin.
Sam, you brought up some really good things here to kick this discussion off. And, you know, you were talking about we want our children at a early age to realize they're not the center of the universe. And, yeah. And you know, that a good definition of sin, which Luther liked to use, is it's inward curvature, that it's all about me, myself, and I. The unholy trinity. And so the heck with what anybody else wants. And I know you have some young ones there in your house. And so, you know, it's hard for the little ones to realize that there's brothers and sisters, there's mom, there's dad, there's the other relatives, there are the neighbors, there's people at church, people at school, people at the supermarket, people in the park. And so your behavior and your choices, your decisions do have consequences. And so you were pointing out something very good there, that we like to point out and teach our people that they're not the only person in the universe. And so their decisions have consequences, sometimes good, sometimes bad. And that seems to be kind of lacking in our time, does it not?
Oh, I think so. I mean, it goes kind of hand in hand with, like you said, sort of the, just in terms of things, you know, things Sixth Commandment related these days, that it goes with that attitude of I can do what I want kind of thing. And as a result, it's, you know, things are very subjective, very, it's that kind of the postmodern mentality of it's all relative, and, you know, whatever I think is okay for me, that may not be what you think is true. But this is true for me, or it works for me, or it makes me feel good, or, you know, whatever kind of thing. But notice the center of all those statements is still the same. It's still myself. It still goes always back to me. I think Luther was pretty wise in putting the first commandment. Of course, he followed the scriptures in putting it first, but, you know, saying that it was the fountain commandment and everything else flows out of it. Because at the heart of all of this, of course, is our sinful idolatry. Today, the fancy word for it is autonomy, right, that we want to be a law to ourselves. And I think with this kind of objection to the Christian faith, that's ultimately what we have to try to poke some holes at and even, you know, work around it a little bit to try to dethrone the autonomy idea and realize that, in fact, even on a basic human level, we are all, in, I mean, majority of us, dependent upon each other for something.
Yeah, even before we go into a theological reaction to this challenge, you know, it popped into my mind that I saw a film years ago where one of the leading Satanists in the United States, Anthony LaVey, he said that the whole satanic Bible, which they have, you could boil down to this statement: do what you want under the law with love is everything. You know, so you as an individual are free to do whatever you want, just so you say that you're doing it lovingly. Boy, that isn't. Could we begin there, Sam? That when
yeah,
we
I
listen
think that's
to
pretty,
that, it's
pretty illustrative of. I mean, I think of a lot of, we'll just say maybe cultural opinions or you know ways of thinking move in kind of in almost like tidal systems. You know, they ebb and flow, and I would say that's probably a little bit more on the high tide these days in terms of maybe just a cultural conscience.
Yeah, I was thinking too. It really revolves around that I want, and when you listen to the statement that I kind of began the show with, it says people are free to do whatever they want to do. You know that's not even really fair. I think that's kind of disingenuous on their part because they start out with people are free when they really what they mean is I as a
right.
person are free, right?
Yeah, exactly. I would like to do this, therefore I can. Right? That's kind of the I want to do this and I should be able to. So I'm going to do it. And I mean, talk about an utter disregard for the neighbor. Ultimately, at least there's one of the major points I think that factors into this. So. That's maybe one thing that people can take away as far as how do I counteract this kind of thought process in people. Some of it is just to make them aware and kind of unpack for them what that certain either behavior or attitude or sometimes it's just words that we say, how that may affect the neighbor and they may not even realize it. Similar to when, like we talk about the fourth petition of the Lord's Prayer and God giving us daily bread, and we know it's not just a loaf of bread on the table, but we start to look at all the things that that means when God gives us all that we need for this body and life. It's a lot, and it involves a lot of people and a lot of good vocations, right? So the neighbor can be harmed in a lot of ways, sometimes many of which we can't even notice right away, but it will happen.
That's an important point I think you're making here, Sam, is that even our decisions have consequences that, what would you say, they're not immediate, they're not short-term, they might be mid-term or long-term, but we've got to take those into account. We certainly want that teach that to our children and as many people as we can. Beware of all the consequences you have of your personal decisions.
Yeah, and especially, you know, kind of the unintended things. I mean, a simple illustration maybe is if somebody were to apply the same way of objecting to the Christian faith and to apply it to the way that we drive on the road. Now, there's probably a lot of people out here in California that might disregard this conversation, but typically people want to try to avoid getting in a collision on the road or avoid running a stoplight or something like that. But let's say, well, I don't feel like running, stopping at some red lights today. I'm going to just drive and keep going. Because I feel like it, and who cares, right? That wouldn't fly, first of all, for the police that might pull you over, and it certainly wouldn't fly for the families that may get injured in the process of that kind of collision that may occur. So that even just on an earthly level, kind of a first article level, that just doesn't hold water.
And, of course, when you say first article level, you're talking about the first part, the first article of the Apostles' Creed, which...
Yeah, certainly. Yeah, the stuff that deals with creation and our, you know, both our care of creation as God's stewards and his creatures, and then our care of one another, you know, within creation. Yeah.
That's, I think, a vital component of our response, our apologetic to this kind of laissez-faire practice and belief, Sam, that who are we really accountable to other than ourselves and maybe one other person? And you're bringing up even in that traffic example that there's really accountability to more than yourself. And it's not just even to the other motorist, is it?
No, it really is. I mean, it's the people in the car. Luther talked about the neighbor being anybody you came into contact with during that day. may not just be the person that's, you know, in the car next to you or at the home next to yours or whatever. It's the people we come into contact in our vocation with whom we have the most opportunity to, you know, either share the gospel in words or to show Christ's love in our actions.
You know, also when you listen to that statement that we're all free to do whatever we want to do as long as it doesn't hurt anybody, would it be a good idea to, and this seems so much of the case, doesn't it, Sam, that we have to make sure we're understanding the words, the definitions, the meaning that people would attach. So we might ask, what do you mean by hurt somebody?
Yeah.
Talk to us about that a little, if you would.
Yeah, I think it's always a good place to start, and this may be helpful for somebody who has to deal with a conversation like this or anything similar, is just a simple definition of words. You know, what do you mean by hurt? What do you mean by free? What do you mean by is this good or bad, or is this right or wrong? Because those words do have meaning, and though we often put or attach different meanings to them, you know, the way that we define those words is going to shape the conversation that ensues. I think one of the illustrations that kind of came to my mind as I was thinking about this last week was usually when you are at home and you watch a DVD or, you know, for the antiques among us, the VHS tapes, right? At the beginning would always come up this little thing about, video piracy is not an innocent crime or not a victimless crime. It's like, well, yeah, because you think you're doing something, you know, just for yourself or whatever, but you're actually ripping off all the people that helped make that movie and that kind of thing. So I think it's a similar sort of thing when it comes to our attitudes in this regard too. It's defining the words and knowing what we mean by them.
I think that one too, your example, Sam, is a pretty good one, because if I'm not mistaken, when that comes up, it's an FBI seal.
Yeah, that's true. You got that too, which is always kind of a little, oh, boy, they really mean it.
Yeah, and, I always think, they're going to go after the big guy that's trying to make a lot of money off of a public showing or something, or recreating them and
right,
profiting.
Right.
They're not going to get me, little old me, you know.
Yeah, I mean, in reality, probably not, but that doesn't give us the, you know, we're talking about kind of being anarchists, really, is what that attitude is. It doesn't give us license to ill.
Yeah. And so, you know, if we were asked people, okay, define hurt, mm-hmm. They might have a hard time even coming up with an articulated response that makes sense. They may be, and you know, Sam, I know you probably run into this a lot too, that people just haven't thought through a lot of this, have they?
I think that's a lot of the case. A lot of discourse or conversation these days tends to take place sort of like our Twitter accounts. You know, you snap off a quick 140-character little thought or something shorter, and you don't really think about it. You just press the button, and it goes. And I think a lot of people treat conversations that way, too, where they don't really think about what they're doing or posting or how that's gonna affect or be read, or even how clearly they've thought it through themselves before they end up saying it or writing it, perhaps, if it's in print or in digital numbers and ones and zeros and post it online.
So we were getting in something really good that you steered us to, Sam. You talked about the first article of the Apostles' Creed, where we're talking about we believe in God the Father, creator of everything. And you know, Luther's explanation of that is so helpful and useful. And so our neighbor, that person out on the roadway, or even walking down the street next to the roadway where we might, by our careless driving, we might injure them or property, it comes into play, doesn't it?
Oh, definitely. I think so.
Help us with accountability to God. You know, a lot of people say, well, I don't believe there's any God out there. I don't believe there's any creator. So how could I be accountable to someone, something like that? How would you respond? That might be. I know we're going down a whole different show.
Okay. That's a good place, because it does. Even though that's a bigger topic, it does overlap with this quite a bit. Because when people, and I'm sure well-intended or maybe even not so well-intended. Christians have said this kind of thing before, too, right? I'm free to do whatever I want. This is actually kind of similar to the old antinomian controversy that was around in the Reformation era. There's a whole other show for you guys, too, to do. whenever somebody says something like that, there is a bit of a... It's an issue of authority. Like, we don't want to have somebody in authority over us. In other words, we don't want somebody telling us what to do or what not to do. We want to be the one that tells ourselves, essentially, and others, usually, what should or should not be done. This is kind of the default setting of our old sinful nature, that we want to be the one in charge. We want to be ultimately God, just like Satan tempted Adam and Eve in the garden. This is really an age-old kind of thing. But in reality, we're all accountable to somebody in this life, whether it's those others around us, or whether we are in a family, or no matter what your vocation is, there's somebody that's going to be over you in authority, or somebody that you are going to be accountable to in life. Which is a little bit of a glimpse, not a perfect image, because we've marred this with sin. But in 1 Corinthians 6, Paul is telling the Corinthians about, in particular, the issue there was sexual immorality, and we talked about that a little bit earlier on. But he warns the Corinthian church, you know, flee from sexual immorality. Don't do those things. Right? Everything else is outside of your body, but the sexually immoral person sins with their body and then with others as well. But then he goes on to say something I think even greater, that do you not know that your body is a temple of the Holy Spirit within you, whom you have from God? You are not your own. You were bought with a price. Therefore, glorify God in your body. And I think that's probably a good way to approach that, too. Right? We're bought with a price, and therefore we love others as God in Christ has loved us.
Sam, that's so right on, and I think very valuable. That it always has amazed me, and I'd like to hear your thoughts on this, that whenever Jesus and the Apostle Paul, whenever they take up this topic of sex and marriage and even the family and church leadership, they always begin with the beginning where it says that God, the Creator, made them male and female, mm-hmm. and he made the male for the female, and vice versa. And so, when we're asked, whose authority wants it that way? We say God, the Creator. He made the male for the female, and he also made it, in various scenarios where. And we need to be, I think, clearer and more forthright on this, we in the church, that, you can sin just as much as a homosexual can when heterosexual sin is did at times with individuals that God does not want. And so there's that accountability, isn't there, because he is the Creator that you brought up first of all.
Yeah, I think the accountability issue is there, and the other interesting thing that Paul does here as well, and I think is helpful for us in our discussions with people, especially if it's about something maybe a little more, controversial or emotionally charged or things like that these days, is Paul drives the discussion and he ends with the gospel. You know, you are not your own; you are bought with a price. That's good news. That means that Jesus paid the ransom for us. He laid down his body to free us from all the sins that we've committed with ours and with other people's bodies. This is a very real, tangible kind of forgiveness and mercy. And so oftentimes when we counteract objection to the Christian faith, we often, they make a law statement, because doing whatever I want is a law statement. It's couched in terms of liberty and freedom, but it's the law. And then in response, we say, no, do this instead, and we respond with the law. Not that we shouldn't, but that we ought not leave the law by itself. In other words, we ought to use the law if it's necessary to be spoken at that point. Use the law to drive the gospel. I think that's a good place to take. Anytime you can steer a conversation in any kind of objection to the Christian faith back to the cross, that's where you want to go. That's where you want to spend your time. And try to avoid the rabbit trails that get you away from the cross or back to yourself. But go to the cross and go to the redemption and go to the you were bought with a price. And then there's a response to that, of course. Then glorify God in your body. But that all begins in the cross.
such a fine point you're making here that, you know, too much of the time when we're talking to people in discussions like that, we fail to tell them that there is forgiveness, there is redemption. When we repent, say that we have done wrong, we are accountable to God, and that He has did a marvelous thing in Jesus, that He has taken care of all that. So
yeah, everything we were accountable to is and failed to do, right, is taken and not charged against us. In fact, Jesus is held accountable for everything that we did wrong and failed to do right.
Well, let's do it right here. Let's take a break, and we come back. Let's spend a little more time about that. The law and the gospel as applied to the apologetic, free to do whatever you want as long as it doesn't harm, here on Cross Defense. Stick with us.
Worldwide KFUO salutes our day sponsor on this Monday, October 26th, 2015. Today's day sponsors are John and Janet Rao. Today's day sponsors have made a contribution to Worldwide KFUO in loving memory of John's father, Albert C. Rao, on his birthday, and for his support of Lutheran Hour Ministries. Once again, we say thank you to John and Janet Rao of St. Charles, Missouri. Today's Worldwide KFUO day sponsors.
Hi, I'm Andy Bates. I invite you to join me for His Time. We share the daily readings from the Word of God and check in with regular guests.
Good morning, Andy. How are we doing?
We also chat with special guests.
Good morning, Brother Andy.
A guest pastor joins us to study the daily New Testament reading.
Hey, good morning. How are y'all doing?
Finally, we join together in morning prayer. Begin your day with His Time, 7:15 to 9:30 each weekday morning on Worldwide KFUO, the messenger of good news.
The Lutheran Study Bible you know and love is now available in a compact paperback edition. Weighing in at a slim 2.1 pounds, the newest edition is a compact powerhouse, the same great content of the original Lutheran Study Bible. It's a perfect fit for gift-giving, outreach, youth ministry, and more. The Lutheran Study Bible paperback edition, available at cph.org, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040, cph.org.
Worldwide KFUO, your most trusted radio station for Christian talk and sacred music. Listen on the air, online, and on demand 24 hours a day at KFUO.org. Listen anywhere you are with your Wi-Fi radios, smartphones, computers, and even on your smart TVs. KFUO embracing today's technologies to bring the good news message of Christ to the world. Listener-supported Worldwide KFUO, the messenger of good news.
If you're planning to name your newborn boy Jacob, you're in good company. It's the number one boy's name in America and has been for over a decade, and the name of one of the most significant patriarchs in the Bible.
There's a Hebrew folk saying taken from 1 Samuel 25:25 that says, "Like his name, so is he." It's thought that a child's name is important because of the influence it has on how a child's character develops. There's no question that the Bible permeates every aspect of our culture. It is truly a major cultural force, and even the most skeptical can appreciate its impact and come together in its history. For many parents, learning about the person for whom a child is named is a great way to identify with the history of their roots, those with whom they're connected over the centuries. Engage with the Bible, with its history and impact.
Brought to you by Museum of the Bible.
So glad you're sticking with us today on Cross Defense. We're talking about the challenge we receive a lot of times. It seems more and more young people are into this, and some older people too. Kind of goes like this. People are free to do whatever they choose to do as long as it doesn't hurt anybody. And we're talking with Pastor Sam Schultheis. He's pastor Redeemer Lutheran Church, Huntington Beach, California. Also a thinking fellow of 1517, The Legacy Project. Sam, when we took the break, you were bringing up a really, really important point that when we're engaged in these intellectual challenges, so many people that I've talked to on this program, great apologists, all of them, it seems to be really trending strongly, which I am so glad that it's not just about winning intellectual arguments. It's about introducing some people to Jesus. And so you were saying, you know, we just can't slam them with the law. We need to provide the gospel. I was involved in a rather lengthy back and forth exchange on social media here recently about abortion. And, you know, this very challenge came up and you had, you know, framed it well in the first part of the show that, you know, it's my body. So I'm going to do with my body what I want to do. And, you know, the rest of us were chiming in saying, well, you know, if that were true, that might be another discussion. But what we're talking about here is another person in your body that, that doesn't have a say in it. And so we're defending that person in your body.
Right.
And, you know, it got kind of back and forth and harsh. And I jumped in and said, you know, but listen, because I was thinking, possibly the person that was defending this, I can do with whatever I want with my body, had an abortion. And so I stated, hey, look, to any person that's had an abortion, if they realize that this is offensive to the Creator, a redeeming God, and they ask for his forgiveness and believe it's there in Jesus, they're going to get it. And that's what you're saying, isn't it? It's always important to bring that part of reality and truth into apologetic discussions.
Yeah, certainly. It's I mean, it's always the case that if you go into an argument or a discussion on the Christian faith in order just to win points, you're really lost before you already begun the discussion. And you know, another thing too, that's the whole point isn't to win the argument, but to proclaim the gospel, because apologetics is a great thing. It's useful. It's a wonderful tool. It's you know, it's scriptural, all these good things, but it's only good so far as it drives you to the gospel. Because if you don't get there, let's say you've you know, won somebody over with your argument, but you haven't proclaimed Christ, then you really haven't done the job, at least not all the way. You may have drawn the hammer a little bit down, but the nail isn't quite in the coffin or something like that. You know, you need to get to the gospel with that. And I realize that's a law statement, but it's an important thing to remember that in our apologetics that we do as 1 Peter both commands and promises, that we will have the opportunity, and when we do have that, to speak of the hope that is within us. And that hope is not winning an argument. That hope is proclaiming Christ crucified that wins over sin and death.
Amen. So as I like to define apologetics as intellectual slum clearance, if we're able to clear the slums of people's thinking, let's say on this accountability issue, then we want the opportunity to plant the seed of the gospel and let the Holy Spirit water that.
Absolutely. Yeah, we have a popular Saturday morning seminar that we do around here from time to time with different speakers, and the name that I gave to it a long time ago was Declare and Defend, because we want to defend the Christian faith, you know, clear off that dross or that scum, like you said, and then we also want to defend. We want to build up and declare a good case for the Christian faith, why it is trustworthy and accurate and reliable, why you can put your hope and confidence in what Christ has done, not only because he answers the historical objective kinds of critiques that people have, but because the Christian faith also answers those existential, you know, inner longings that we have. And I think this kind of objection gets to a little bit of both our reason and our, just to use the word kind of in a broad way, imagination.
Very well. I want to kind of use another example, if I may, to help people, all of us, answer this challenge. And this is a quote that comes from none other than that great theologian, George Clooney. he wrote, in talking about religion, as you all know, anything you say sort of ticks off a bunch of other people and sort of attacks their belief. So I always try to say that, first and foremost, I think that whatever anybody believes, as long as it doesn't hurt anyone else, it's fair enough and works. How about that?
Yeah, that's a pretty remarkable statement.
Where would you start on that one, Sam?
Oh boy. Well, I think it's kind of an easy target these days, but I would maybe start with. Sometimes you have to do things in some stark contrast to make a point. So I would maybe hold up a few pictures, or I wouldn't make them watch the video, but maybe just describe what the ISIS thugs are doing over in the Middle East, and say, well, they're doing what feels right to them. Do you think that is good or bad, and why? You know, just kind of put it pretty bluntly to somebody like that, because maybe sometimes they haven't really thought about the consequences of this kind of thought, like we talked about before. And then you can see that not all religious claims are created equal.
I thought the first part of his statement was pretty fascinating, and maybe not totally right on, but it's approaching it when he said, when you talk about religion, anything you say sort of ticks off a bunch of other people and sort of attacks
right
their belief. Isn't that right on?
Yeah, I think there's some truth in that. There's some words of wisdom in that too. This is kind of the interesting thing. When you have these discussions with people, you're going to notice it's like they may not be all the way off, and they may be, but a lot of times there's going to be something in there that you can grab onto like that and say, okay, good, you're at least thinking in the right track on this. Let's focus on that comment and then see how we can build a bridge a little bit closer to one another on this discussion kind of thing. It's kind of like C.S. Lewis in the first opening chapters of Mere Christianity approaches Christianity from what he calls the argument from moral law, or the law of nature. And what he means by that, not just things like gravity or other different natural laws like we call them mostly today, but he means the sense of right and wrong, in other words, what we ought to do, behavior, that kind of thing. And he does a great job of saying, well, you know, the moment that somebody says, yeah, I don't really believe in a right or wrong, you know, essentially like we hear today, it's all up to each person to decide what's true for them and true for me and all that kind of relativistic kind of thing. The next minute, if you cut them off on the freeway or cut them in line or take their seat on the bus, they will start complaining. In other words, they will start appealing to a standard, even if they're saying the opposite thing of what the standard is. You have to, again, these words mean things, right and wrong, and if you're going to use them as if they have meaning, usually that means that you're appealing to some kind of standard above you or outside of you that gets to a real right and wrong, as in an objective outside of you, right or wrong, a law above our laws. And so I think that's I talked about at the beginning, there's a first punch. The first punch is kind of subjective. And the second punch is kind of touching on here, that now there's actually an objective thing there. Because if we're claiming to be free and being able to do whatever we want, the little grain of, I wouldn't say truth in that, but the grain of the hook you can use to kind of discuss that with more is they're appealing to something that is right and wrong. They're appealing to a standard. They just happen to be making the standard themselves. But that's, of course, where it goes wrong. But they're still appealing to a standard, and that shows that they, even though they recognize or they place themselves as the standard, that they recognize there is some kind of standard out there, and you can maybe work with that, depending on the attitude and how the conversation goes. But that's what Lewis tackles in the first few opening chapters of Mere Christianity, and he does it brilliantly. I'd recommend it to anybody who's dealt with this kind of objection, or even the right and wrong kind of issue, because that comes up a lot too.
Yeah, you're really getting where Lewis takes us so wonderfully there to, whose authority and what is the standard, and does it cover everybody? And you know what we hear today kind of is, well, the majority rules, even if you're only 50.1, you can rule over the 49.9, excuse me,
right.
Because you won the election,
right? Right.
You won the contest, and he's not referring to that at all, is he?
Oh, no, not so much. More so that, he kind of has two main points at the end of the first chapter. One, that everybody on Earth has this idea that they should behave a certain way, and you can't really get rid of it. We've done a good job of, squelching it in places or ignoring it or acting contrary to it, but there's a certain thing that tells you, the news calls it a tragedy for a reason when somebody is murdered. Why? Because we know that that is a wrong thing to do. That is not a good behavior, and we know that that is not good as in, well, we just kind of made up the word good, or not social construct, not some kind of herd mentality, but this is an objectively bad event. And then the other part of it is that even though we know this, we don't always act that way. In fact, most of the time, we do not behave this way. So we know that there's a law, that we know there's right and wrong, and we know that we don't follow it. And we can see that in others. That's why we cry out like things are not fair, or why people around here, you know, flip up a certain finger when you might accidentally cut them off on the freeway, because you know you're not supposed to do that.
So, you know, in Clooney's definition there, he kind of ends it with, as long as it's fair enough and works. So he's got the fairness standard in there. And then he really brings in pragmatism, which is huge, I think, in today, isn't it? It works for me, might not work for you, so leave me alone. I like what works for me. And yeah. You're suggesting, as Lewis, that we try to encourage them to say, nah, let's don't go just for a pragmatic result, although that's important in certain situations. Here, we're looking for morals that are universal for all people of all times.
Right,
and,
right.
And so we try to bring in a little more history, a little broader view. Is that kind of a good tack to go sometimes, Sam?
Yeah, I think that's fair, because the tricky part about being pragmatic is that somebody can always be more pragmatic than you, and you could get, you know, what may work for you, it may work better for somebody else, and it can end up being kind of a slippery, dangerous game to play. That's not a very good, just not a very good firm foundation to be on. Realizing these objective, universal things, and these days we have an uphill battle to climb in a lot of parts of our society and conversations we have with people, because again, the objective truth is in some places just taken for granted, if not outright denied. And so getting people to the point where you can have a discussion that such a thing exists, that may even just take you a while to do.
And I've learned in so many ways that when you are arguing with someone, and I love Greg Kokel, who's been on the program as well,
he's good. Yeah.
That has Stand to Reason, because, you know, he does a really good job. And if you're not familiar, check him out, Stand to Reason. He has even some Bible studies that people can do where he talks about you can either argue in a loving, respectful way, or you can argue in a very hateful and damaging way. And so arguing with someone is not a bad thing to do. It's how you argue. I know you, Sam, you're one that wants to argue and does argue a lot in a very respectful and tasteful and understanding way. And when we do that, I think we're challenging ourselves and other people to put your best out there in terms of your thoughts. And then let's both look at them and evaluate them. And we're pretty confident, are we not, Sam, when we're doing Christian apologetics, that we can take the heat, we can stand the heat of the kitchen and get in there and discuss it out with anybody.
Yeah, I think so. You know, again, First Peter, after he talks about making a defense, an apologia, right, for anyone who asks for the reason, the hope that is in us, he says, do it with gentleness and respect and having a good conscience. And that's always easier to say than it, of course, is to do. But, leaving a conversation off in that kind of manner is going to give you another opportunity to talk to that person, Lord willing, again. And, you know, leaving it off in a, if it's a screaming match, for example, well, you've probably burned that bridge, or it, at the very least, maybe made it more difficult to talk with them again or for somebody else. But if we carry ourselves, again, it's always a reflection, a response of the love that God in Christ has shown us. If we carry that to others, it's not that every conversation is going to go smoothly or that we're going to win the arguments or anything like that, but we will be reflecting that that love and light of Christ in as much as we are able to. Thank God that too is the work of the Holy Spirit. So there's also some true Christian freedom in that.
And you know, I was remembering back that there's a Christian musician that I really admire a lot. And he has a song, but I love what he does with this song. And he tells this story that when he was growing up, that his mother, who was a single mom, only allowed classical music in their home. Bach, Mendelssohn, Mozart type of thing.
Mm.
And so he said that his older brother would sneak in a Beatles album And he said, of course, we could never play it unless we knew that mom was gone. And we could always tell when our mom was gone because she had a terrible bad muffler on her car.
Oh.
And you know, then he'd make this muffler sound and you hear it kind of fade. And then he starts singing the Beatles song. And then you hear the muffler noise come back and he would go back and play Mozart, you know. and he'd say, the only problem with this is a lot of people try to run their life like we did with the muffler and the Beatles. And I love that point, and
yeah,
I think
it
applies kind of here, that, you know, a lot of people don't realize that God's aware of everything. You can't really fake him out, can you?
One of the classic ways of looking at the law side of this is to get people to think about, well, would you want, you know, your entire life, and if not that, maybe your thoughts and everything broadcast on a big old screen in Times Square. I mean, I know I wouldn't. I don't know too many people who would, if pressed to a corner on that, would say, oh, yeah, sure, let's run a editor's cut on that and have at it. I don't think so, because, again, the law is going to reveal our sin and show us our sin. And, I mean, thankfully in this, we can point to the one who took that sin upon himself and, you know, in freedom laid down his life for us that we might be free from sin.
And you know, we hear the Apostle Paul lamenting that same thing in Romans 7, that, you know, at times he has the thoughts that he knows he shouldn't have,
right,
and he can't get them to stop. And he asks, who will save me from this wretched, you know, mind that thinks these things that I don't even want to think, or these things that I say that I don't want to say, or and he, again, as you say, he goes back to Jesus Christ.
Yeah, and so, always back to the cross. Love that section, because he kind of, it's like he throws his hands up in the air and just says, I give up. I there is nothing good within me. You know, Lord have mercy.
So, you know, is that with some people, if you're spending the time respectfully and patiently to tell them that this is the accountable God that we have, that he even knows our thoughts, our motivations, and, you know, even in that, what is it, the first or second chapter of Romans, Sam, he reveals that, you know, that people even know that he's out there, but they don't even let themselves recognize that. They become that corrupt.
Sure.
And so we all know that there's, and he's given us that conscience to talk about that, to alternately condemn or defend us. And some people even want to turn that thing off and are pretty good at it. But God notes that. You're still going to be responsible for what you do. I was thinking of a passage in Romans 3, verse 19, where he talks about the law accuses every one of us, so that the whole world is going to be held accountable to God on that standard. And there we are, back to the law, what we have to do or not do to please God. And then, you know, we can easily bring in, yeah, we're all failures at that. But there is a great escape route out of that dilemma, isn't there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a good thing to do as far as our verbal posturing in our conversations with people is one of humility, and then also one of putting ourselves on the same kind of on the same plane, or saying, you know, we're in the same boat kind of thing. Whatever analogy you use, make that kind of thing clear, because oftentimes people think Christians have this sort of holier than thou, more righteous, kind of goody-two-shoes sort of attitude, when in fact we need to remind them as much as ourselves that we are all sinners. Luther, we are all beggars, this is true. And to remind them that this is, you know, we're not coming from a position of, you know, up here kind of thing, but rather really down here in the basement with them, too. And that's precisely why Christ came, not because we were somehow advanced in our holiness, but because he came to give us his holiness.
Yeah, I love that, statement that Jesus makes when, you know, he says that, I came for sinners, people who need a doctor of their souls.
Yes.
The hospital for us sinners. And so, you know, it's terrible when a church, when you know, this goody-goody two-shoes person realizes there are other centers among them.
Right.
And, they're like, oh, no. They're the ones that have it wrong. And it sure helps the newcomer, the unbeliever, doesn't it?
I think it's a good thing to do that, you know, to not that we take pride in our sin, certainly not, but that we show and tell others the reality about ourselves as well, and not you know, not hold back on that too much, or not try to soften it or downplay just the reality of our sinfulness. Because I think if we come to that position of humility with those folks, I think that'll speak more than the pridefulness kind of thing. I was joking with somebody once. They said, I don't really want to go to church. There's a lot of hypocrites, it seems like, there. I said, well, come and join us all, because there's always room for one more.
Absolutely. And as we're running out of time here, let's try to wrap this up and give us some final thoughts and conclusions on what we've tried to offer here today about the topic. Are we accountable to God or anyone other than ourselves? Because a lot of people like to argue against that, to say, no, we can do whatever we want as long as it doesn't harm anyone else. And we've talked a little bit about how we need to help them and ourselves to articulate what do we mean by, you know, do whatever we want, and what does it mean to hurt someone, and then talk to them about our accountability to God under the law. And then when we've clearly let them know that that's a real problem, that's a real issue with each one of us, we can give them solution.
Definitely. I think those are some good things to do. And I mean, one need look no further than our belly buttons to know that we are not accountable only to ourselves, but rather that we were, you know, just as in the human lives, we were given life by another, namely our parents. In the Christian faith, we are given life by another, namely Christ. And he has given us new birth by water and the word. And because he has given us that new birth and life, we also share that life and love with those whom we come into contact with.
I know how important it is for all of us, Sam, when we're witnessing to somebody that thinks that, you know, maybe they've had a life of decisions and consequences that they think the rest of us don't even know about, and they've did horrible things. And, you know, we can use like the example of the Apostle Paul, who says, I don't deserve to be an apostle because I kill Christians. And
sure,
we can all,
I'm too full of sin to be a priest,
yeah.
Like Luther said.
We can all argue with those people and say, well, right in there with you, because we're big sinners too.
Yeah,
but
absolutely.
Jesus died for all of us. He wants to save all of us, and we want that too. It sure helps, doesn't it? We got about a minute left, Sam. Any last-minute words on this topic before we have to say goodbye?
Sure. Well, I think just to follow up on that last comment you made there, that you know, our sin is not greater than Christ's forgiveness of our sin on the cross, and to drive these kinds of conversations to the gospel, however you can, is going to be time well worth it. Chances are the people talking to you will not have ever heard the gospel proclaimed so freely and joyfully as that it is that free gift that has no strings attached. It is the promise that God has taken all the things we failed to do and done wrong, and he's held himself accountable in his son Christ. And when we go to the gospel in our conversations like that, I think that's going to be that'll serve us well, and it'll serve the gospel well. In addition to that, and like we mentioned before, there's a bunch of good resources out here to help us with that. You know, the Lewis book we mentioned on Mere Christianity, and tons of different resources by Greg Kokel and the folks at Stand to Reason.
Well, we thank you for all of those and for your time today.
Gladly.
Pastor Sam Schulteis, Redeemer Lutheran Church, thanks for being here on Cross Defense. Next week, Andy Rassman of Contradict Fame, going against the Coexist People, and we'll talk about the apologetic of who is Jesus, who is he to you on Cross Defense. Join us next time.